I don't have too much experience with making pottery. I have, like some of you, I suspect, been to one of those joints where you can go paint a mug or a plate and then have it fired. And I did work with a bishop once who relaxed by making pottery. But actually, working with clay is something I have not done in decades. And I did it as a small child when I played with modeling clay, and perhaps you did that too. I can't say I'd really thought about that experience until recent weeks when Chip started playing with a new batch of the stuff. And I was reminded of just how tactile it is. How malleable. It's soft. It's squishy. It starts off rather formless, and yet it can be shaped into creatures and objects. It's a vehicle for letting the imagination travel to wonderful new places. And the beauty of it is that when one is done making something, one can just smush it up and start over anew. That's about as close as I get to the potter and experiencing what the potter in Jeremiah's story goes through. For me, it's just some idle play. For the potter, it was something different. Now, today, many people like to collect pottery, and some people like to make it, but it's not, for most people, a central part of their lives. But back in the time of Jeremiah, pottery was ubiquitous. There were no paper plates, no china, no melamine, no Pyrex. You ate off of pottery, you drank from pottery, you stored liquids and foods and stuff in pottery. You even wrote on it. It was everywhere. So everybody hearing this story would have had encounters with pottery and most likely would have known a potter in his or her village. And they would have been able to see what was going on here, imagined it perfectly, of something being made and formed and shaped, and then not quite meeting the mark. And so in that instance, the potter, having limited resources, limited time, would start over with what he had. Now, I thought back to the modeling clay as I thought about the process of making pottery, and what it was like to come up with something that wasn't just right when I was a kid. And I'd form something and shape something. And I remember sometimes one end wouldn't be just right, so I would pull a little bit off the other end. And then I'd move it to the front. And I'd try to smooth it out so it was just right. But it never, ever, ever seemed to be perfect. There was either that little hairline that remained, or I'd worked so hard to make it look like it wasn't grafted on that there were huge thumb depressions. I could never get it just right. And so at that moment, I was confronted with a choice. Live with the imperfection or start over. Now, as an adult, I can say it was just a matter of play. But when you're 6 or 7 years old and you're making something, that can be the most important thing in the world. You've got a vision of what it is going to be. And I suspect everyone here has had the experience of being around a frustrated child who has invested so much of his or her heart in making something, only to have it not work out. That is the intensity of experience that God, the potter, has with Israel. He's walked with them for so long. Encourage them and shape them and form them and love them. And they keep messing up. And Jeremiah was a prophet for 40 years. And he saw a lot during his time. He'd had occasion at one point to be hopeful during the reign of Josiah, the reforming king. The people seemed to be back on track. Reforms were made at the temple. People were rediscovering the Torah. There was a renaissance. And people were excited to be walking with God. And then in one of those senseless disasters that can change everything, Josiah died in a pointless military encounter with the Egyptians. And he was ultimately succeeded by Jehoiakim, who proved to be nothing more than a puppet of the Egyptians and wasn't particularly committed to the faith of Israel. And so the people began to stray again, and sin began to take hold. And Jeremiah had to put on his cloak and once again go back out into the streets and preach to the people and say, folks, wake up, pay attention. We need to make changes or disaster will strike. They didn't listen, and the disaster did strike. Looking back in hindsight, we can see these words and be uneasy and uncomfortable, because it seems to portray a God who is bent on punishing his people. Yet there's another way to understand what is going on here, one that doesn't deny the reality that life can be hard and painful. And that is to see hope. God keeps working that clay. And God keeps working with the people of Israel. This is the only time a potter is mentioned in the Old Testament. And we never actually see the vessel being put into the kiln. It's only when the clay is fired that change is no longer possible. Oh, we can make a mess of the modeling clay. Watch what happens when a six-year-old takes blue clay and red clay and green clay and yellow clay and decides to start braiding them together and mushes them up. And then says, Dad, can you straighten this out? I can't. But in the clay that is our lives, God can. And God does. These words were preached to a people at a specific moment in history. But they have resonance with us today. They are meant not necessarily for individuals, but for communities. And not just for an individual church community or faith community, but for the community of the faithful. To take a moment, to slow down, to listen, to discern God's will. And we can look around the world today and think of all of the things that are going wrong, that are challenging us, that we find frustrating and depressing and disappointing. And we can ask, how might a faithful church be able to make a difference? We can think of how people are looking for the church to provide a word of hope. Think about the response to the new pope. despite the scandal that has overwhelmed the Catholic Church in recent decades, that has shattered foundations of trust. It is clear people still want someone to preach a word of hope. And as Francis has moved to talk about issues of poverty and to speak to people who have traditionally been cut out of life, people are willing to pay attention. And that's with all that has gone on. That offers a word of hope for our church, the mainline church, too. We've been sidelined in many ways in our culture. The days that many people here remember when Protestants spoke and everybody listened are history. They're gone. But we have an opportunity through faithful living and service, lives that are open to God's word, to make a difference. Imagine if all 2 billion Christians in the world were just like the most faithful, dedicated, prayerful person each of us knows. The world would be a very different place. We can't change everyone else, but we can start with ourselves and our community, and then work in our denomination and in our neighborhood. We have a choice. We can be like the brick I showed to the children before, or we can be like the water. God is constantly blowing on us and tapping us and shaking us and holding us. God is always present. We are not alone, ever. The question for us is whether we are open to God's presence. Think about what Jeremiah told the people. God will change his plan in response to right living. It's pretty remarkable. The creator of the universe cares what you and I do. God will change not because we have some kind of magical power to force a deity to do something, but because God has entered into a covenant relationship with us. God has chosen us to be his partners. I hope you find that as exciting and empowering as I do. It's amazing. It's affirming. Think about some modeling clay. Think about yourself. What are the things that you would like to shape and create? What might want to start over or to improve? What are the things that you think might be an imperfection that are instead something that make you unique and special? Think about the clay that you can work with. Think about the clay that God has chosen to work with. And take heart and rejoice and give thanks.